Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Back-to-back championships are bloody hard, and maybe that's a reason why Kerry struggled yesterday, is that trying to get themselves back up to that height again this year is going to be an ongoing challenge throughout 2026.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Hint March Green with Cadbury.
Welcome along to another episode of The Green Scene on Off the Ball, your podcast for all things Irish football. The Green Scene on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury's. Easter weekend has came and gone. A hectic weekend in the League of Ireland and across the pond. We saw some of the wounded men of Prague chip in with some impressive performances and big goals for their club sides in the run into the championship season. And two of them even defeated the best side in England. We saw many bright moments from young stars across the pond and beyond. Owen Elding's 13-second goal for Hibernian, Jack Moylan's promotion-clinching winner, all the way to Jaden Uma's wonder free kick in the Portuguese capital. We will cover it all over the course of the next 40 to 45 minutes. So, I'm Ben Symes on hosting duties this week. I'm delighted to say I'm joined in studio by Monaghan's own David Wilson. David, how you getting on?
All good, Ben. How are we?
Very well. And I'm joined on the line by, once again, roving reporter Matthew Brennan, who's a little bit closer, I think, to his hometown in Westmeath. Matthew, where the hell are you today?
Yeah, your geography would be correct, Ben. I'm in the wonderfully beautiful Carton House. You can see behind me here, there's a bit of a golf course. I'm not sure how well you can see. You can probably just see a tree.
Just see the trees.
I'm out in the wilderness. Well, look, if I was out here, there'd be plenty of golf balls flying into the trees, but I think I'm well out of the range here for those who are planning to trade here. I'm at Carton House because a certain Manchester United, obviously I'm a Wigan fan, Ben, you're a West Ham fan, David, you're a Man United fan. I probably came out of this weekend the best, considering Wigan got a big win down the bottom of League One. West Ham, less said the better, and Man United, I suppose, are here in front of me. So a bit of an open training session style situation here for Manchester United. Obviously 24 days it'll be since their last game when they take on Leeds at Old Trafford Monday.
Monday night.
So they're here today. We had a bit of a 15-minute look at them doing some drills earlier on, and then a wee bit of a press conference. Got the chance to ask a couple of questions to Amit Diallo and Brian Mbeumo. So interesting stuff. Obviously, I was over with Andy Reid last week, and I'm with some active footballers now at the moment. So this roving reporter thing, I wonder how long it'll last. Hopefully a little bit longer.
I thought you'd be in Carton House because it looks like, you know, it's Masters week, and I was thinking, is there some sort of golf angle to this?
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, you wouldn't be forgiven for getting fully into the swing of the Masters thing. I've seen people walking around the office in green jackets already all morning, so I thought maybe that's why you were there, Matthew.
And there was even Nathan Murphy.
that's astonishing that it wasn't Nathan Murphy. Have you seen him? I imagine he probably does have a green jacket on him.
He was floating around here earlier, but no green jacket just yet anyway.
Yeah, I know. The players are here for a couple of days. I think they came yesterday. They're here for a few more days. So I imagine there'll be a few rounds of golf put in. We know the footballers like taking part in a bit of golf. So that's the crack over here. Won't be doing any golf myself. I'll be looking to get back to Dublin. Hopefully the traffic isn't as bad as it's being made out to be, but I imagine it probably is.
Matthew, obviously Manchester United are over there training because they have a big gap between their game against Leeds, the same side that they're scheduled to face in Croke Park in August. I mean, just general thoughts maybe on this fixture. I'll throw over to you, Matthew, since you're over there first. Is this good for people of Ireland? Is this good for Irish football? Where do you really stand on this?
It is an interesting one. It's definitely going to be one that's slightly divisive, I suppose, considering Croke Park is our national kind of stadium as far as GAA goes. We don't tend to see too much soccer going on there. Obviously, we did have that period when Lansdowne Road was becoming what is the Aviva Stadium now. What's that? It got to 20 years ago now, which seems a bit crazy to say. We do have some other stuff that goes on. You know, you get the odd concert there. There's plenty of talk about Katie Taylor perhaps fighting there. Hopefully that does happen. I don't see too much of an issue with it personally, once it's not kind of putting any issue towards any of the big games that are going to be going on around then, whether that be LGFA finals, Camogie finals, and then naturally the Gaelic football and hurling finals. I don't think it will have too much of an impact on those. It definitely will have an impact on those attending, and I don't think the pitch will be in any way worse off as a result of it. I think this is probably going to be just after, is it? I'm not entirely sure on the date, although I was looking at it a couple of minutes ago. It's in the middle of August.
Yeah, 12th of August, I think.
Yeah, it's on a Wednesday. It's a midweek game. I don't have much of an issue. Like, it's good. They're going to sell it out. Like, I mean, they picked the two perfect clubs, I think, as far as Irish fan bases go.
Yeah.
But it's definitely going to rub some people up the wrong way, I imagine. But me personally, I don't see too much wrong with it for the time of year that it's been played in as well.
Yeah, I think the biggest threat to it at the weekend is that Leeds could get to an FA Cup final and could actually qualify for Europe. So if Leeds are in playing in European competition, then, well, actually, they could be playing in the Community Shield.
I was just about to say, so if Leeds either win the FA Cup, which they're 9-1 to win the FA Cup now, they're in the semi-finals, or get relegated, which is more likely according to the bookies, they're 6-1 to get relegated. This game won't happen because Leeds are either playing in the Championship or in the Community Shield that day. Or, sorry, the weekend just around it, so they won't be playing in this game. There's also the question of if a League of Ireland side is in the European playoffs, that'll be taking place that week. If it's Europa League, that'll be, could literally take place the very same night. Could be a Thursday if it's the Conference League. It depends the way these games kind of go.
Or it could even be Champions League.
It could be Champions League. It's Leeds United versus Manchester United. It's a big enough rivalry. You're going to need a big guard of presence at this. Also, the small matter of it being over €100 for a ticket to a pre-season friendly, and you're not even guaranteed, one, for it to happen, and two, for either team to put out a strong team.
Yeah, like, what even if Manchester United drop down, have a horrific end of the season, which they could very well have, and they could be playing qualifiers in the,
for the conference league.
Yeah,
play conference qualifiers. Yeah,
I think, like, the thing around the Leeds getting relegated would be that it would, would they play a cup game? Does the season start with the Carabao Cup or something, maybe?
Yeah, the second round games. And
they would play that, I think, and then this game would fall between that and the first game of the Championship season where they got relegated. Imagine the £100 thing is a bit crazy. That is a mad price for a pre-season game, to be totally honest, but that's just the way these things go. I'd be surprised if the game didn't go ahead, all of those things considered still. I think it would be a bit naive for them to plan and do all of this stuff around it and not have thought about that, you know.
But I think the game will more than likely go ahead. I think Leeds will stay up. I don't think they'll win the FA Cup. I don't think Man United will drop out that, you know, I don't think they'll drop down the table that much where they're playing some sort of European qualifier in those weeks as well. I know you mentioned the ticket prices there, but I suppose Manchester United and Leeds have such a following in Ireland. I suppose it's the John Giles derby as well, and the game be taken very close to where John Giles grew up, in Croke Park. So from that kind of events, it's pretty cool to have the issue. Like, the ticket prices are extortionate. They all are extortionate, but I guess for fans of those two clubs, you know, it's quite expensive to get to England to watch those games as well. So, you know, it's an opportunity for young people, children, to go and see their favourite English teams. The issue that I'd have is that the game is obviously happening in Croke Park, but that money is not being reinvested into Irish football. That money is being reinvested into the GAA. And I think that's the biggest bugbear for me, is that, it's a cool occasion to have something at like this at Croke Park. Like, I'm not that pushed about it. Like, I don't think I'd pay the money to go if it came to it. But the money, the events that the GAA put on in Croke Park, you know, 90% of that money gets reinvested to the grassroots and GAA. And that is a good thing for GAA. But as regards Irish football, there's actually probably no benefit of it at all.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. I wouldn't have much to add. I'd agree pretty much with all of that. I wonder, is there, like, who do you blame for that?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's, again, at the end of the day, it's a business. You're going to try and make as much money as possible. United, interestingly, are spending a lot of time in Europe, it seems, this year in for their pre-season. And what, obviously, with the uncertainty travelling to the Middle East and even to the Far East as well. I know they're colonial terms, I shouldn't use them, but, you know, I guess clubs are probably, you know, a bit wary about doing that. And obviously they're not going to the US because probably the World Cup is going to be on.
Yeah, that's another factor where players also are going to be coming back late from the World Cup. Yeah. So I know Manchester United are going to Scandinavia as well as going to Ireland. So there's that factor of it. I think I'm wary of talking about this for too long because we've had quite an impressive weekend from Irish players across the pond. But I do think that's probably the key factor in that, you know, who does this really benefit? It doesn't really benefit Irish football in any way. In a weekend where we've seen ex-Irish internationals complain about facilities and academies here, and here you have this huge game where tickets are going to be over £100 and Irish football is not going to see a single cent from that back, really.
Yeah.
And also that clashing with potential playoffs for a League of Ireland sides.
Yeah, that would be a huge week in Irish domestic football, no matter what happens. Like, you'd imagine there should be at least one, possibly two teams, you know, going to try and qualify for the league's phase of European competitions. Like, it's a real slap in the face, I think, to the League of Ireland, to Shelburne, the Shamrock Rovers, to Derry City, whoever else we playing in Europe. I think it's a bit of a shame. And one thing I like, obviously, we were very lucky within this studio and this office that John Giles worked with us for so many years. And it's kind of cool to have this game so close to where he grew up. But other than that, I don't really see the benefit of this game taking place at all.
John Giles, who
just
also...
Just out of...
go on.
Sorry, yeah, just out of interest, obviously Arsenal are coming to Dublin as well during the summer to take on Real Betis in the Aviva. Where would that money go?
Well, that money, but it's an interesting one because the Aviva Stadium isn't directly owned by the FAI either.
No.
But what we do know from this game between Manchester United and Leeds is that it's in Croke Park, so quite literally all of the revenue will be going back to the Gaelic Games Association.
Yeah, most of it, and then some of it obviously to the clubs as well. But then for, I think there's like there's an agency that organises those friendlies for Arsenal and Real Betis, and that money doesn't, as far as I know, go towards... football within Ireland. So yeah, like, it's kind of cool.
Would there be a world where whatever League of Ireland team gets to whatever stage of the playoffs are in on that given week, that the game would just be played in the Aviva,
as in the League of Ireland team would play their game there?
Yeah, like where's the Croke Park thing come into it?
No, it's nothing to do with Croke Park. It's the fact that, you know, there's going to be a friendly between two huge Premier League teams that it's going to sell out. There's going to be a lot of people there, and they're going to that instead of going to a League of Ireland side competing in a European playoff, potentially two League of Ireland sides as we saw last year. Mm. I think that's the big issue, that this probably will clash. Well, it will clash in terms of the week. And it's a lot to ask for parents to bring kids to two games, space 2 days in the middle of the week, especially when one costs over £100 for a ticket.
Yeah. The thing is, though, I wouldn't, like, a long term, I'm not overly concerned by it. It's just a one-off event. Interestingly, though, like, I think Croke Park isn't used enough sometimes for football games.
It's definitely not used enough, no.
I think it's kind of cool. The last soccer game that was there, soccer, football, 2009, Ireland and France, 1-0. I think Nicolas Anelka scored. And obviously we had the playoff then in Paris the following week where the famous Thierry Henry handball. So, like, I remember some of those nights. Like, I remember being lucky enough to go to some of those games. But in those years, I'm a bit older than you lads. Like, I can remember...
Hold on, you're not that old now. Yeah, I can remember them as well.
I know, but the Glenn Whelan, my first ever Ireland game was at 2-0 against Italy. And I don't think I've ever, like... At that time, I remember thinking, this atmosphere is unbelievable. Like, could you imagine... Could you see the Republic of Ireland men's team, maybe the women's team as well, playing in Croke Park? Would that be something that you two lads would be up for?
There's a question of, like, whether you're up for it or not. I think I'd be up for it. The question of whether it happens or not, I'm not so sure about. Yeah. It's something that I would definitely get behind. I can remember that Italy game as well. I've got great memories of it. I've got bad memories of it because I've been banging on about Gilardino for about 2 weeks before the game, and then he ends up scoring the equaliser in the 90th minute. It's something I'd definitely get behind. It's whether or not it'll happen is an entirely other story altogether.
Yeah. Matthew, what do you think?
Well, obviously, like, it would be a great occasion. I think there'd be a lot of logistical stuff would have to go into, like, the cost of putting on a game. Would it sell out? Who's playing in the game? There's all those things that naturally come up, but I don't think it'd be a terrible thing to happen by any means. I'd be totally in agreement with you in the sentiment of Croke Park not being used enough. I think actually in outside of football in general, there's more things we could be doing. I think we get concerts there the odd time, and look, it's a sporting venue after all, so I'd have no issue with any extra sporting events being put there. I think the main one on my radar is making sure Katie Taylor gets a fight there, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, we've seen Joshua Fury. Could that happen in Croke Park?
Yeah, I have no idea. I'd take that with a pinch of salt. Our land, but that's probably for a different podcast.
I'm wary of lingering on the, I suppose, effects and pain that we still feel from Prague. So instead of talking about that, I'm going to talk about maybe some of the men who felt a bit more pain than us, those of us in the stands, some of the men on the pitch, and two of the men who were, I suppose, quite hot topic after a full-time whistle in the Fortuna Arena, were Finn Azaz and Ryan Manning, who both helped their Southampton side defeat the, I suppose, can we call them the best side in England? I suppose we can, since they're
best side in England,
champions elect.
Yeah, best side in Europe as well, I suppose, because they finished top of their Champions League. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like, that remains to be seen. They're going to play Sporting fairly shortly as well. I watched the game Saturday night and I was absolutely delighted for Ryan Manning and for Finn Azaz, who at the two of them played, I thought, really, really well. Manning had a tough game against Max Dowman, who obviously is an incredible talent and he's only 16. And he'd done really, really well against someone who's going to be an absolute superstar. I know there was a tackle early doors and he got a yellow card.
That was brilliant. And it was brilliant.
Yeah, and I've seen he's getting a lot of abuse online from Arsenal fans.
I was going to comment on this.
Yeah. And like that's just typical Arsenal fans. They just live, you know, chronically online, like the worst fan base in probably the world for just being online all the time. So I was delighted that Manning he's a young lad. He's old enough, he's good enough, and he's obviously strong enough to kind of, he's going to be on the receiving end of these tackles all the time anyway, so he may get used to it. And I just thought, in fairness, he got that yellow card fairly early-ish in the first half. Mm. And then you're kind of not worried, but you're kind of wondering, will they take him off? Because, you know, Diamond's going up against them. They might put Martinelli on that side as well. And he dealt with Everton really, really well. And to bounce back after, you know, what happened in Prague, and to bounce back and put in a performance like that. I know he didn't play against North Macedonia, but yeah, I was delighted from like, if you look back at Manning's season as a whole, and I know Matthew, you've been paying particular attention to him as well. He's had a really good season, and maybe his best, maybe in his career. I'm not so sure, but yeah, like it's just one moment of madness, unfortunately, that has kind of maybe ruined his reputation within Ireland fans.
Matthew, is Finn Azaz good enough to step up to the Premier League?
I think so. I think he's one of these players that you watch and he's like, he will rise to the level of the players in which he's playing with. He'll rise to the environment. I thought he was very good without being on the score sheet or setting up goals. Actually, for Ross Stewart's goal, who's probably actually got the best nickname in football, the Loch Ness Drogba, I can't get enough of that. But Azaz sort of makes it's not a decoy run. It's an intentional run just before Ben White kind of misjudges the cross, but he's in the right areas and he was very good. Was it Fulham, I think, they beat in one of the earlier rounds too? Southampton on the run to the semi-finals, and he was excellent in that game as well. So from what I've seen of him this year, I think he is one of those players that could definitely step up to the Premier League. You would just fear that maybe if he does go up with Southampton, which is very possible now with the mad run, they're on 20 odd games unbeaten, they're two games in hand, a couple of points outside the playoffs. If they do go up with Southampton, you just worry maybe that the same thing that happened to them last time they went up might happen again, and he kind of gets ground out in a bad team. But he's definitely someone I can see lower mid-table Premier League team taking a punt on. I think Vinny had mentioned it on the show probably last week. Time is going so slowly after Prague, everything was ages ago, but he said about him, he's one of those players that if you put together a scouting report on, you will think this guy is a world beater, like just purely off of what he does on the game in the games and on the ball and off the ball, because he does get a bit of stick, I suppose, for being somewhat of a luxury player, which I think is a horrible term to be honest, because it insinuates you don't do that and off the ball, but I think he does. And he's definitely someone who could make the step up. And then just on Ryan Manning very quickly, you mentioned about his season. Like, it's probably his been the best season he's had for Southampton anyway. Possibly matching one of his last season at Swansea was quite good too. He wasn't actually in the squad at the very start of the year. Wasn't in the starting 11 under Will Still. They had a guy called Wellington playing at left back. He picked up a bad injury. Ryan Manning was coming off the bench. You might remember that unbelievable free kick he scored the opening day of the season against Wrexham. And had a bit of a period after after November, after we beat Hungary, where he wasn't really in the team all too much, and came off the bench in a game. They were 3-0 down in against Leicester and scored the equaliser. They went on to win 4-3, and he's been ever present since then. And he's definitely worth his weight. And I was absolutely delighted to see him absolutely crunch Max Dowman. Not because of an issue with Max Dowman, but I just think it's one of those that don't be treating him like a kid if he's going to be out there in a pitch full of men, you know.
I'm actually loving the like scenic bird sounds that I'm getting through my headphones from the back of Carton House. Finn Azaz and Ryan Manning are on their way to Wembley. Ryan Manning unfortunately won't be playing in that game. He's suspended because of that yellow card for the tackle on Max Dowman.
It was still worth it.
Yeah. It was definitely worth it.
Finn Azaz, just the links, I don't know if you've seen, like Everton, Fulham are the links that I've seen.
Fulham be a smashing move.
Yeah, I just be
smashing move.
Yeah, just worried about, like, obviously Marco Silva if he leaves. sometimes going into a team where even your manager can be a bit, yeah, can be a bit sticky. But I definitely think he could make an impact in those clubs.
And, I agree.
And as well, sorry, he was signed that time for Borough when Morgan Rogers left and went to Aston Villa, and he was kind of that replacement at Borough, and obviously he's gone to Southampton since. But if you're like the next player in after Morgan Rogers, you must be a pretty good player, because he's pretty good.
There's also a pretty interesting storyline brewing in that Middlesbrough are perennial kind of bottle jobs at the minute in the championship. They're throwing away games for fun, and they're sort of slipping into a playoff situation as opposed to an automatic promotion situation. It's not totally done yet, but Southampton are heading the other way into the playoffs with all that momentum. So there is a world where Middlesbrough and Southampton face off in the playoffs, and Finazaz isn't the most loved person in Middlesbrough because he obviously made the move to Southampton, and I think he said something along the lines of, I don't want to put words in his mouth, that it was he felt as though he was joining a Premier League club, which obviously Middlesbrough fans took as, oh, you don't see us as that. And Middlesbrough have been excellent all season, and I think they beat Southampton 4-0 maybe one of the days early on in the season. Zaz got a bit of a heckling from the crowd, so that's one to keep an eye on as we head into the crunch time in the EFL.
Couple of goals from the championship from Irish players over the course of the Easter weekend. Adam Ida and Tom Cannon scored against each other on Friday. Andy Moran got a great goal at the start of the weekend. Great to see him in a bit of form. Casey McAteer with his first goal for Ipswich. What a move that is as well, by the way, moving from Leicester, who look like they're destined for League One, to Ipswich, who have now moved into the automatic promotion spots. Mark Sykes was also on the score sheets for Bristol City, but I want to move a little bit down to a side who are going to be playing in the championship next year, because Jack Moylan, ex-Shelburne, ex-Bohemians, ex-Wexford, ex-Malahide United, scored the goal to clinch promotion for Lincoln City. Their first time in the championship in 65 years. The seventh lowest budget in League One. The highest paid players on £3,500 a week. Like, this is just an absolutely phenomenal story. Those of you who tuned in to Off the Ball know Dion Fanning was there over the East weekend for the home game on Friday. He wasn't there for the away game on Monday, which got them promoted. But this is just an unbelievable story. I see Landon Donovan is involved in the club in some shape.
He's on the board of directors.
Like Lincoln is not exactly a place you associate with a powerhouse of football. Matthew, I know you've been keeping a close eye on League One and League Two, and I know that's your neck of the woods now. I'll be there seeing West Ham, don't worry, it's not a dig.
Yeah. Watch yourself.
What can you tell us about Lincoln City this season?
They've been unbelievable. They were kind of one of the favourites. I hate saying a team's favourites to go down, especially in the EFL, because it's basically just based off how much you're paying your players and how much business you do in January, and then it sort of figures itself out a little after Christmas. And they didn't start the season particularly well. Like, they were grand, you know. They were kind of par for the course. And then since, did they lose, I think, maybe to Wickham in November, or they had a comeback against Wickham in November, and have gone on an absolutely outrageous run of, they're unbeaten in about 20 odd games. I think
24.
They're 19, 19 points clear of the team in third place. They're 12 ahead of Cardiff, who looked like at one point Brian Barry Murphy's Cardiff were going to saunter their way through the League One campaign after coming down last year. And Lincoln is one of these clubs that, as from an Irish point of view, we always do keep an eye on, because they value our market, they value our players, and they have done for a long time. We've seen so many countless players go over there. There's a few players there at the minute. Obviously, Josh Honan is there, hasn't had really any impact since he went over being injured. Jack Moylan, obviously, has been a star man. What a moment for him yesterday. The commentary, his name is going to be etched in Lincoln history for the next however long, forever, really, I suppose. And although I actually, not to be that guy, they were mathematically up with a draw anyway, but the moment is still
we don't pay any attention to that, Matthew. All we pay attention is Jack Moylan, the headline.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be fair to him as well, he's not had it smooth since he went over. Was obviously, was very well spoken about by Damien Duff when he was at Shells and went over and was really good, picked up a bad injury, was really good again, picked up a pretty bad injury at the start of this season too, after starting the season quite well, and has worked his way back in, has been excellent for them. Like, they're a bit of star power in a team that is absolutely kind of more than the sum of their parts, you know. And it's brilliant, and it's what the EFL is all about. And I know we kind of don't talk we don't kind of hold it in the greatest esteem because a lot of our players go over to England in the lower tiers and don't do that well, but it does show the kind of the magic of what the English football pyramid can produce. And James Collins also is at Lincoln as well. I just wanted to, there was another name, I think there might be someone else, but
yeah, Oisín Gallagher,
they're a good club. Oisín Gallagher, I think Aaron Drinan had been over there a bit for a while.
Sean Rowan, it's just an amazing story. He's gone to Huddersfield now.
Donald Mandrew,
there's loads, Anthony Scully. We could go on and on. It is something, as you said, they value the League of Ireland market so much.
Yeah, I just like it is some story, like, and from I was just reading Adam Crafton's piece earlier there this morning, like the lowest average possession rate in League One, 26 or 77 goals have been from set pieces, and they scored 30 of 64 last season from corners and free kicks, and they finished 11th. So they're kind of this season compared to last season, they're kind of scoring from set pieces from every 16. They're scoring one in every 16. So they obviously are using that kind of AI-driven, data-driven kind of fine margins. And they've done an unbelievable job. Michael Scubala, obviously, who was actually the manager of Leeds at one stage. Yeah. And he was also involved in English futsal teams, which I think is something that maybe Irish football can learn. I know they're trying to with the UEFI Pathways plan, that maybe we can maybe produce some players through futsal and kind of keep especially young players ticking over in the winter months with futsal. So it's just kind of an interesting point. And yeah, great story as well. A place is kind of the middle of nowhere, really.
Yeah.
I'm always reminded of that In-Betweeners episode when Will is contemplating going to Lincoln.
Lincoln University.
And he says effing Lincoln. So effing Lincoln no more. It is Lincoln of the Championship and Lincoln of Jack Moylan. And I think it's a class story, like for the league and for him. Because like he was on loan from Bowes to Wexford and was class at Wexford, and is in the same kind of crop of players like Dawson Devoy, Ross Tierney, all those players that are still at Bowes. And it's just a great story for him as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, you talk about the possession stuff. It helps when you've got a player like Jack up the other end of the pitch. That goal like really reminded me, and I'm not saying he's going to take the same trajectory, but like the Georgie Kelly goal for Rotherham a couple of years ago. And it went like, I always see Rotherham fans commenting on Georgie Kelly stuff still. Like his name is etched into the history of that club. No matter what happens with Jack Moylan's career, and I think he's only going to go from strength to strength.
Yeah.
Like his name will be etched into Lincoln City's history forever. Is Jack Moylan a player that we could and maybe will see in the May camp in Spain, the Ireland camp versus Granada?
I'd be 99% sure that he'll definitely be in that squad, because like this is the squad for him. Unfortunately, we've no competitive games in the summer to look forward to. And he obviously has promotion sewn up already. He'll have maybe a nice maybe week's break before the meet up for the camp, so I think 100%, and I'm actually kind of excited about it as well. Like I know, geez, we'd all love to be going to the World Cup, don't get a start on that, but yeah, this is a time for players like Jack Moylan to kind of show him or Hallgrimson, the Irish coaching staff, what they're all about. And I think when you spoke to him or last week, he kind of really values getting to know players and getting people within the camp and kind of spending time with them. And I think this is a great opportunity for the Irish coaching staff and for Moylan and players of his ilk.
Before we speak about that camp in particular, just before we stray away from League One, there was another man who scored two over the weekend, Johnny Kenny.
Yeah.
Penalty on Friday night and a goal on Monday.
Sumptuous.
Absolutely. Bounces the defender to the floor and then chips it into the far corner.
Yeah.
It's good to see him picking up a little bit of form. I know he would have been disappointed with his international break, and look, let's call a spade, he'd be kicking himself for missing that chance at the end of the North Macedonia friendly. But it's great to see Johnny Kenny back on form again.
Yeah, for sure.
Go ahead, Matthew.
No, sorry, I was just going to say that I do think if that was maybe in an Ireland game and the same thing happened, we'd be screaming for a foul. But at the same time, it's an absolutely excellent finish for his goal there yesterday. And he struck up a bit of a nice partnership there with Sam Dalby up front. They've been struggling for goals a little bit, Bolton, all the start of the season. And Dalby picked up a bit of form just as Johnny Kenny signed while he was in. He obviously signed injured and missed a couple of games. So they've the Stephen Schumacher has managed to get them both playing well beside each other. So,
As we spoke about Jack Moylan maybe in that camp to face Granada in Spain in May, a couple of other players who had some pretty impressive weekends, to put it lightly. Owen Elding is where we'll start for Hibernians. A goal 13 seconds in versus Killy on the weekend, the man who's will be getting his Irish citizenship month. There's been a few rumours of England sniffing around and maybe trying to woo him to another persuasion. I presume we are going to see Owen Elding in this camp in May if he's allowed to play. I know Hibernians will finish around that weekend of the Scottish Premiership, and obviously they're in the top six. Mm. But Owen Elding, 3 goals in 7 games for Hibernians in Scotland, absolutely flying it.
Yeah, he's absolutely flying, and I am a little bit worried, but that hasn't been done. His Irish passport hasn't come in the post just yet. It can sometimes take a bit of a while. But yeah, he is an incredibly exciting player. I think I wouldn't even bother putting him into 21 squad. I'd get him right into that senior squad straight away for the May camp in Spain. Interestingly, like, he's gone straight into the team pretty much at Hibs. And
he's the Kieran Berry replacement.
And I seen a bit of kind of chat online about, oh, I wasn't really sure about this Elding lad coming from the League of Ireland, and he's like blown people away. So it's just really exciting. I am a little bit concerned that it's not been done yet, but this is a fellow actually I watched him at the Kennedy Cup when he was probably under 12 or 13 back, I don't know how long ago, was that 7-8 years ago now, and obviously his dad is kind of gone down in Sligo Rovers folklore as well. He's grown up in Ireland and went to school in Ireland. Like, yeah, he is an Irish footballer, like, and he is another League of Ireland product that we're all incredibly excited by again. And I think, yeah, we spoke about obviously moves and stuff. Remember back in January about, oh, where should this player go and this player go? I think Owen Elding and the people around him have picked a really good club to go to, and he's playing, and that's probably the most important thing.
Yeah, it's a brilliant stepping stone. I always think players going to Scotland, because the level isn't probably that far above the League of Ireland level, but you're on Sky TV cameras and you're in front of a much bigger audience every week. Matthew, would you have any concerns about Owen Elding and England maybe sniffing around to see if he'd be interested?
My logical hat would say no. I think we'll be all right. I think he'll eventually get that citizenship, that passport over the line, and be wearing the green jersey. But obviously the scar tissue still lingers and will linger forever. So there will always be a little bit in the back of my mind until he's out there on the pitch playing for Ireland. But he looks a physical specimen. That's the biggest thing I can say. He looks ready for that level of football anyway. So great to see he's playing well, and the move certainly looks like it's been the right one for him. As you say, his people around him have picked a good one.
A couple of other League of Ireland graduates who had some pretty good weekends. Mason Melia made his long awaited Spurs under 21, under 23, is that what we call it now, the Premier League 2, came off the bench in the 67th minute, and then 3 minutes later had already scored his first goal for Spurs. I don't know if you saw his interview after it as well, just so well spoken. Seems like a man who's destined to do big, big things over there. And then over in Portugal, I mean, if you're going to talk about a humdinger of a free kick, this is probably as good as they come. The Lisbon Derby in the under 19 Portuguese League, step up, Jaden Uma, an absolute rocket into the top corner. This guy's someone who I know all of us have been banging the drum of for a long time. He made his Ireland 21 debut just at the end of March. Is he a player that we might see in this camp in May?
I think because he's probably not playing first team football, I would say he should be definitely a shoo-in for the camp in Spain. I know we're like, oh, we should call him in. Like, yeah, there's probably a limit to amount of players that you can call in, but this fella is so exciting. Like, he looked like a man against boys in the under 17 World Cup last year. He is such a unique talent that I don't think we have. We don't have talents like his across the Irish underage teams. Like, he's this marauding physical left winger, reminds me a lot of, I know because the club he did play for before, Rafael Leao, and I know he went to Sporting after that, but he reminds me a lot of him as well. Like, he's just this brilliant dribbler, huge physical presence, brilliant in the air, can score, right footed playing on the left. Yeah, I'm really excited by him. I just don't know where the next move comes from. Like, I don't know if he stays at Benfica. Obviously, Benfica is this amazing club that have brought through so many good players, and players that haven't even played for Benfica that go and play in clubs all across Europe. Maybe Jay Numa is one of them as well. But I just think he is someone you need to get involved in this camp, and maybe in the camp in Canada during the summer as well.
Yeah, for sure. No, I definitely get him in there for a camp like this. It's just unfortunate. It's not unfortunate. It's natural kind of progression that he hasn't got any first team minutes. He can't be far away from what we're seeing. Obviously, this free kick is the kind of standpoint or the statement that that everyone has seen. But he's been scoring goals in at that level for a long time in the UEFA Youth Leagues as well. And the Leao thing is uncanny, I think. I recall a goal he scored against in the under-17 World Cup, one of the early games. It was offside, actually. It didn't get allowed.
Oh, yeah.
He cut in from the right and just whip one into the top right-hand corner. And it was almost identical to, I don't know if you remember, Rafael's goal for Portugal against Switzerland to make it, was it 6 or 7-2 at the time, maybe? They were miles ahead, but it's an identical finish. And I said a few minutes ago about Owen Elding looking like he's ready. This kid seriously looks like he's ready.
Where do you think he goes? Like, you love the confidence.
He's on the confidence. Yeah, no, you don't need to go anywhere.
I know, but we need our players playing, I suppose. Yeah. And well, maybe you don't look at Seamus Coleman, but like, what is the next move for him? Because I don't know what it looks like.
I'm really interested to see, does he leave Portugal? Do Benfica want him to go to another club in Portugal? I wouldn't be surprised to see him make his Benfica debut off the bench for the end of the season. I think that's probably the next step up, and let them kind of see what you're about at a senior level. I probably would like to see him stay in similar enough surroundings. That's what he's been playing and obviously progressing well in for the last couple of seasons. So I wouldn't be opposed at all to see him go out on loan to another Portuguese club. And let's be honest, like when you go outside, maybe the top four, maybe five teams, if you want to count Vitória Guimarães in Portugal, it's not that high of a standard where he really, I think, could kind of lay a claim to senior football going forward. I know we talk about maybe Owen Elding being wooed towards England. There's been a couple of players who've been rumoured to be wooed the other way around. I mean, I was in the room last week when Heimir Hallgrímsson admitted that they've gone over and spoken to Liam Delap. And I mean, I've read some of the piece about it, and it didn't quite sum up the mood, I think, of basically when Heimir said it. He kind of laughed. He basically just laughed and said to the room, he's not getting any closer to England at the moment, is he? Like, you know, our offer is where it stands. Liam Delap is one, I think we've spoken a few times. The other is Alex Scott, which is an interesting one, who has obviously been in England camp before. His grandparents are Irish. Did you see the pictures of him supporting the Irish rugby team?
Yeah, I did actually see that. Yeah. Did his grandfather brought him to games and stuff?
Yeah, his grandfather used to bring him to Irish rugby games. So
is that worse than wearing an England top going to a rugby game? That's a joke, by the way.
It's as bad. So obviously a guy who obviously is connected to his Irish roots, same way obviously Liam is, considering his father played for Ireland. Is Alex Scott, are we kind of maybe dreaming a little bit too high here? Could we really see this guy in an Ireland shirt ever?
I think it's a bit unrealistic to think, because he's such a talented footballer. You'd imagine if he's already been in an England camp, that's probably where he'll go. That, you know, this current obviously England team are kind of looking forward to the World Cup in the summer. But then after that, then who's the next generation of players? And I guess like Harvey Vail would be in that generation of players. He played alongside Alex Scott in England underage teams as well. So yeah, like England are probably in the process of bringing those brilliant 17s, 19s, 21 teams coming through, and Alex Scott probably feels that like as if he is very much part of that. I find it unlikely. I find the Liam Delap one maybe a bit more likely. But the only problem about the Liam Delap one is that after Harry Kane, like if you look at the next English strikers, Ollie Watkins, Danny Welbeck, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, they're all heading or even past the 30 mark. So he's probably thinking, well, when Harry Kane eventually does retire, which mightn't be for another long time about the way he's playing, he could be next. Like, what are the other England strikers? But yeah, I don't know what your kind of thoughts on that, Matthew.
Well, Alex Scott would be absolutely transformational. Like, I think we'd be a completely different team if we had someone like Alex Scott or Alex Scott in our midfield two or midfield three or whatever it looks like. But I think it's seriously unlikely. But I'd love it. On the Liam Delap thing, like, it's funny, we're in a position now where we've got a couple of strikers who are quite good, and we're not as desperate for someone like Lindelöf as maybe we would have been only 2 or 3 years ago, maybe even only 18 months ago, with Troy Parrott's kind of emergence, which hadn't really happened before that, even though we knew the talent that he did have. Do I think it's going to happen? I still would say it's on the unlikely side, but the fact that they're still talking about it means that it's not impossible. And again, we're in, as I say, we're in a position where we're not desperate for it, but we're also... not in a position where we can be turning our nose up at a guy who's playing for top six, if you like, excuse the term, Premier League side, playing Champions League football. And yeah, he's not been brilliant since he signed for Chelsea, but we know there's a player in there. And as I say, I'd happily take any of these lads on board if they want to play for Ireland, you know. So we'll see what happens there. It's one to keep an eye on. But I think, just as a kind of slight aside, if we had have qualified for the World Cup, I think the granny rule, the whole granny rule thing would have been an amazing follow. Yeah. Over the duration between now and when the World Cup would have gotten underway.
I think we're going to see kind of a shift to that in general. I do think we're going to see a push towards more kind of granny rule of players, and maybe a shift back to that era that we had under Jack Charlton, where we saw these players kind of come in and embrace their Irishness and declare for us. I think your point on Lindelöf is quite good. I think even if Lindelöf has a couple of games really for Chelsea where he knocks in a couple of goals, he's all of a sudden in an English conversation, because the pure fact of all the strikers are aging and there doesn't really seem to be anyone else. I would be a little bit more pessimistic about the possibility of Lindelöf playing for Ireland, because I do think it'll be a Patrick Bamford situation where you'll have a player who's going to hang on until they're 29 or 30, and then if he hasn't gone in it by then, he might declare for us.
Yeah, and we shouldn't be begging these people. If these players want to come and play, they can come and play. Like, I think if you look at one of the worst examples of this is the Harvey Barnes thing with Scotland and England, and kind of being like, oh, I might play for Scotland, and then all of a sudden he gets called into an England squad. Like, you know, a couple of months before the World Cup, he gets, you know, he's within a shout of getting to the World Cup, but. You know, I think that's the way he's kind of treated Scotland has been pretty terrible. But like you said there, with the I guess the granny rule, the parentage rule, the heritage rule, is something that the FAI seem to be paying a bit more closer attention to. There's a fellow on the bench for Arsenal called Ciarán O'Neill, who's a Derryman and has played for the North underage as well. It's supposed to be very highly rated. Also played in Croke Park in a coming a month school or a mini sevens kind of thing as well before an All-Ireland semi-final or something as well. So he's someone that Ireland should be getting their hands on, the Republic of Ireland should be getting their hands on. And obviously we have Christopher Atherton, who's made the switch as well. So yeah, the more the merrier. And I think the one really great thing about what Himmerhal Grimson has done, and maybe doesn't get enough credit for, is that this camp and even with Stephen Kenny as well, this kind of environment seems like a really attractive place to come and play. And I think all the Irish players that are currently involved, and then some that might be involved in the future, are really keen to come and play for him and the coaching staff, which I think is a really good thing.
We won't step on the toes of Stephen Doyle in the League of Ireland pod. You can get that in your podcast feed from tomorrow. We had a big weekend here as well, though. I was at Shamrock Rovers Shelburne yesterday. You were up in the town watching the Kenny Derby.
Kenny Derby, Dundalk and St. Pat's. Good. Dundalk were brilliant, really, because in the first half, they scored two goals maybe against the run of play, and Pats had loads of chances but didn't take any of them. And then you're kind of thinking if Pats got one in the second half, they'd get two. But in fairness to Kieran Kilduff, he changed the system. He dropped the team a little bit deeper, and they set out a really good counter-attacking threat. And they won the game 2-0, and they've only lost one game all season. So, yeah, looking forward to hearing what Vinny and Garrett McGlynn and Steve will have to say tomorrow, because a huge doubleheader of League of Ireland at the weekend, and then there's some huge games happening on Friday as well.
Yeah, that the Dundalk one loss as well came to Pats on a Monday night, on a Friday night, where they'd faced within the last 7 days the Derby against Drogheda, Shamrock Rovers away, and then that. And their game relies so much on that press, which they have gone from the front, which is so impressive going forward.
I just said Daryl Horgan, what a player.
Oh, fine wine.
Still going, and he is still brilliant. What a player.
Yeah, so Pats and Bowes are on 20 points, Shamrock Rovers are on 19, Dundalk are on 17 in fourth place, Galway 14 points, Shelburne 13. Derry City are down in 7th spot on 10 points. Some troubling times ahead for Tiernan Lynch. Before we finish as well, I should just touch on the Ireland game against Poland next week, the doubleheader in Gdansk and then in Dublin on the Saturday. Caitlin Hayes knocking Arsenal out of the Women's FA Cup. Katie McCabe didn't start this game, came off the bench. Caitlin, of course, both of them are in the squad for the Poland game. But a mad result. I mean, not a great result for Arsenal, really, across the board from the FA Cup, is it?
No, and a team in both the men's and women's games who take so much pride and have so much history in winning both the FA Cup competitions. Yeah, great header at the back post. And kind of really encouraging for Ireland as well, because I think set pieces is something that Carla Ward and her coaching staff have kind of maybe narrowed in on as well over this last couple of camps. And yeah, they've got two huge games against Poland. Obviously, the first two games against France and the Netherlands were really tough games against two of the best teams, not only in Europe, but in the world. So they'll be really targeting these two games against Poland, where they can pick up points. And as was an exciting time for the men's team over the last couple of weeks, the women's team is super exciting as well. Because could you imagine qualifying for a World Cup next year in Brazil?
Oh, on the beach of Rio?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm there. Count me in already.
Yeah.
I think that guarantee of already having a playoff, and obviously that's true, those Nations League.
Shows you the Nations League is so important.
Those games versus Belgium.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I suppose it's not all brilliant on the women's front. Eva Brennan off Bohemians is unfortunately ruled out of the squad. She has an anger injury. She was going to be the only League of Ireland representative in the squad, only 18 years of age, and absolutely a standing footballer. I've had the privilege of seeing her now a couple of times for Bohemians women's team. Matthew from the, I can't hear the birds anymore, so I'm going to presume that maybe
they're not real. They're mimicking the Masters here. Yeah, they're in them out over.
Is speech. That true though? The Masters birds. They like, people have never seen birds supposedly at the Masters.
Yeah, that's what JD was saying at the weekend. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been there. I'll go find out. That'll be my next golf course visit, Augusta.
Matthew, yeah. any final words before we let you head out of Carton House?
No, just on the Carton House thing. I mentioned earlier we got to speak to Brian Mbeumo and Amit Diallo. I actually asked Brian Mbeumo about Nathan Collins and Keith Andrews. Obviously, he was there when Collins was there, of course, and when Andrews was in the background doing his set piece stuff. And just an interesting little note, you'll be able to listen to that across the socials over the next couple of hours. But he kind of went out of his way to note how great at motivation the two of them were. Motivating the players, he noted how Keith Andrews, despite being on set pieces, still had the kind of command of the dressing room and the communication skills, which is I suppose his main selling point is communication skills. But there was interesting stuff in there from the two lads, I suppose. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I think we're coming to terms with Prague a little bit more now, but it's still going to sting for quite some time. Every time I talk about football, it is just something that lingers in the back of my mind, unfortunately. So maybe I'll have to start talking about something else.
Yeah, it's really interesting though that Mbeumo, who's obviously gone to Manchester United since, speaks so positively about Nathan Collins and Keith Andrews, because we don't really get that insight, really. We don't really know what the two lads are like, you know, behind the scenes. I suppose, like, you hear them obviously coming into Ireland camps, but like, what's that like day to day at a club is very interesting.
Yeah, no, it is. It absolutely is. And yeah, it seems as though he still has a pretty good relationship with Nathan Collins. He said he gave him a text before he came over here to Carton House to let him know that he was in Ireland. Obviously, Nathan Collins, I imagine, is back in London. But yeah, good to see they're still keeping in contact. But the insight is very interesting, for sure. It absolutely is.
That's all we have for this week, folks. The Green Scene on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury's. Matthew Brennan, safe travels home from Carton House. We hope to see you back in the Off the Ball Tower soon.
Yeah, thanks.
Short and sweet. I like it. David Wilson, thanks very much for joining us in the studio. We'll be back.
Thanks, Ben.
Next week, folks. Got a meal with Slán.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball. With Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Paint March Green with Cadbury.